Welcome to Why I'll Never Make It, a lighthearted podcast that takes a revealing look at a career in the entertainment industry, featuring stories and conversations with those on stage and backstage, on screen and behind the scenes. To keep up with all the guests and episodes, go to the website, winmepodcast.com. There you will find ways to follow and connect via Twitter and Instagram, as well as ways to support and donate to this podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Oliver Jones, and this is Why I'll Never Make It. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Why I'll Never Make It. This is part two of my focus on auditions, and today I have with me casting director John Ort. And I first met him about 2 years ago when he cast me in the reading of a new musical called Parallel Lines, which we presented at the Dramatists Guild here in New York. But apart from casting stage productions at places like Joe's Pub, the Cherry Lane Theater, and the New York Fringe Festival, he also was the former manager of casting at ABC Primetime. He's worked on CBS's Bull, NBC's Blindspot, and his associate credits include season one of the series Ozark, which was on Netflix, for which he won an Artios Award for Outstanding Casting. And he's also worked on feature films and even a music video. So he has covered the gamut when it comes to casting here in the city. And I join him today at his office in Union Square to talk about auditions and the art of casting. John, thank you so much for being here on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So as we get started here, just give a brief history of how and why you got into casting.
I originally was an actor and went to Fordham University, trained there here in the city, the Lincoln Center campus. And at that time, really wanted to know what was going on the other side of the table. And so at the time I did an internship both with a talent agency and a casting office. I really wanted to see what both sides of that were.
And at this point, did you have any idea that you would maybe want to go into those areas, or you still wanted to be an actor at this
point? Yeah, I had no concept of that at all. I just, you know, as an actor felt that you're working on the craft and, you know, you're training how to be an actor. But you're not necessarily, when you're in school, always getting a sense of, well, what's the business side?
Right, that's true.
Of it. And so I really just wanted to know what's happening in terms of the representation side of things and then also what's going on with the casting offices. And my internship in casting was in office Johnson Lift Casting, who, you know, at the time was doing Miss Saigon and Les Mis and Cats and Phantom of the Opera, and also doing work at Second Stage. And I just fell in love with casting. And they really took me under their wing and let me go and sit in on auditions that were happening, and just much more than just sort of working in the office. They really let me go and experience, you know, what was happening in the room.
Yeah, to really see what it was like behind the table.
Absolutely. Yeah. After that was over and I graduated, I continued acting, but I kind of always dabbled in it. You know, if a friend was putting up a play and I knew there was nothing in that play for me, I would immediately say, let me cast it. So sort of just always kept doing that.
It was definitely something that you found an interest in and a passion for doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really became, at the time, since I was still pursuing acting, it was a second love, you know, like mm-hmm. I knew I really loved it. And as the years went on, more and more, you know, just started to feel like, you know what, that really might be more the right place for me in this business. You know, now we're going back about, yeah, maybe 12 years, you know, when I really decided to full time transition.
Was there a particular event or something that really happened where you made that transition to casting as opposed to acting?
It was a lot of things, but you know, often the jobs I were booking were out of town. I was doing a lot of regional theater.
Yeah. Which happens a lot. Yeah.
Which happens a lot. And I, at that time, you know, had started a new relationship and just kept feeling more and more the need to settle down more and want to be in New York full time.
You wanted more stability.
I wanted more stability.
Which is what we all want as actors.
And I'm a Capricorn, and it's just part of my nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, I found myself not really loving the work when I was off somewhere for a few months, you know, working on a play. I wasn't really loving it.
Yeah.
And more found myself being pulled towards casting and just finally, yeah.
I'm wondering, through those years when you were kind of juggling both the casting and the acting, was there anything in those times when you got to sit behind the table or cast these student films, as you said, was there anything that you learned there that you then brought over into your own acting and the way you auditioned yourself?
You know, at the time, I'm not sure actually that I was so, I was quite as self-aware as, you know, now years of being on the casting side of things and having a lot more experience, you know, I realize all these things that I wish I knew then. But yes, I see a lot now and I think I made all those mistakes or wasn't aware that I was entering the room thinking way too much about the casting director or who's on the other side of the table, who, you know, trying to impress someone, or that, you know, every audition is the thing.
It's the most important. It's all that matters. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's for an actor, that kind of thinking, I just think now on the other side of the table is like that just gets in your way.
And as a casting director, how does that show up in the room? I'm curious how that comes across.
I mean, the obvious would just be nerves, you know, when you notice somebody's very nervous and, you know, I want to create an environment that's very warm and that's going to allow people to feel really comfortable and let them do their best work.
Right.
And that's why I'm here, you know, is to hopefully be a part of that. You know, don't worry about me. You know, let's focus on the work. Let's focus on, I want someone to come in having really worked on the material, you know, making strong choices and having a strong opinion about what's going on the page. And then there's confidence in that, you know, and there's confidence in that approach, and then be open to take adjustments and be able to play and then, you know, have the ability to be able to then work on it with each other and play a bit.
And as far as being in the room and being prepared and confident, as you say, is there really ever a wrong choice? Because I think that's a lot of times what us actors worry about, that if we make this bold choice, well, that's the wrong choice, and then they won't consider us. Is there really a wrong choice when it comes to preparing for a side?
I don't think there's a wrong choice. I think that what's important is that have a clear understanding of what are the circumstances, what's happening on the page. You know, you have a strong opinion about that. You know what your objective is. You've really worked that material and you're making choices and changing tactics or whatever you're doing that's all for that objective of the scene. There's no wrong choices in that. I might have some information that you didn't have, but I want to see that first strong run through. And again, it's, you know, your interpretation of it. You know, you hear, you know, you don't want it to be one note, you know, so you're looking for, you know, maybe different colors, you know, within that scene. I think it's just important to make sure that it makes sense for the scene.
Yeah. Within the context of the character
exactly,
and everything.
Within the context of everything that's going, yeah. Who you are, you know, on that page and the circumstances, and that everything makes sense. You're not making a choice just to throw in another color that doesn't
just
make
to stand
sense.
Out.
Yeah. But I think that would be a rarity, you know? So that's why I say, no, I don't think there's any wrong choices if you have a strong interpretation of it.
Yeah, it's
in the audition process. Do you know what I mean?
Right. It's interesting that you bring that up, because I just did an audition where it was for this father. He was, you know, this marine biologist. So he seemed like a kind of a professional, but also fatherly. So I was trying to figure that out. And so I went in with a suit, but no tie, you know, just trying to like bridge that gap between professional, personal, still casual. And then the director's in the room. He's like, well, I see this is more like a sweater wearing dad, you know, with slacks or jeans. And so I was like, okay, so I completely got that wrong, but I still got a callback. So even though I made a choice that wasn't what the director saw, you know, I prepared the material and did it and was able to take that adjustment. And exactly. So I think that's what you're saying.
Absolutely.
It's about being malleable in the room.
Absolutely. And that you clearly made a choice. Mm-hmm. You didn't just come in and sort of just read through what's on the page, you know.
Yeah.
You made a clear choice. Right. The director said, oh, I see it differently. And then you were able to take that adjustment.
What would you say is the biggest difference in the type of choices or type of action that you're looking for from stage actors as opposed to film, TV actors? What's the difference in those auditions that you're looking for?
You know, I think that the biggest difference is probably just a technical one. When you're on stage, you're performing for an audience. So you have to be aware a bit more. Do you need to reach 1,000 people? You know, whereas on camera, you know, we often talk about the camera as a spy cam. It's almost voyeuristic, you know, that we're able to spy in on this moment in life actually happening. And so it should be that believable, that effortless.
That intimate.
That intimate, right? Depending okay. on the scene. You know, if you're standing right next to somebody, you know, and you're having a conversation, then there's no need to project
right.
as you would. And, you know, how everyone is immediately trained when they're training for theater.
That's always the first thing I get whenever I go in for TV. It's like, take it down.
Right.
I can hear you.
Right.
It's an adjustment. It really is.
No, but it's that technical adjustment, you know, of just understanding where you are on the page. So on camera, there's no too big. There's no too small. It's just, is it organic? Is it coming from an organic place? Is it truthful? And do I believe you?
Yeah.
You know, I also bring that up in the sense of, you know, some people ask, well, what's my frame? Not that it's not important to know, but, you know, I'll worry about that more than I need you to worry about it, in the sense that I don't want you to dampen down your choices for it.
Right. If you need to make a gesture with your hand, then make that gesture.
And absolutely. I just need you living.
For myself, I've had sides where it was like a page and a half. And so you're actually having dialogue, a scene. And then I've had the ones where it's literally one line.
Yeah.
Maybe barely a sentence.
Uh-huh.
And so is there a different way that we as actors need to prepare for those?
I think with those, taking each one. So the half a phrase, the one word sometimes.
Right.
It's, you know, get back to the basics in a way. What do you want? Who are you? You know, what is the character? What do they do? You see half the time, the name of the role is literally their job.
Right. Waiter.
Yeah.
Reporter.
Exactly.
Whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Salesman. I do think you want to really just simplify it, because at that point, those roles, you know, they're there to help authenticate the world, whatever world we're in, so that people really feel, again, like we're just spying on this life happening. And it goes back to that. Do I believe you?
It's so easy to overthink those one lines.
Absolutely.
Though. It really is.
I think sometimes the biggest thing, especially the one word, that's the killer. Everybody, should I improv? Should I, you know, should I add some things? No, probably not. Yeah. They wrote one word. They're going to look for someone who's going to deliver that one word believably for the situation and the circumstances that are on the page pretty much exactly, you know?
Yeah, because you're really just there to facilitate, to give exposition, whatever it is. You're there to just kind of get to the next plot point.
Sure.
Or the next moment,
sure.
Whatever it is.
But so as an actor, I think just simplified in that way. Now we're talking a page and a half. But still, it's still about what are the circumstances? Why is this person there? What are you doing? What do you want? What's your function? Again, there to become that character to help tell the story.
Right.
You know, as the roles get, you know, larger, when you start getting into situations where it's a recurring or maybe it's a series regular, then it can shift a little bit. I do think it often becomes much more about you. When it comes to those roles, it's not fully realized yet. When you're going to be a series regular or recur, you have the first episode, but you don't know where that story is ultimately going in season 3 at that point when you're doing a pilot.
And so in those cases, is it even more important to bring yourself, to bring those personal choices that you would imbibe that character with?
I think so. I think it is important to bring yourself to it. You want to take a look at the material that's been given and try to get a sense of how much of yourself can you show. Again, it needs to make sense. You know, the choices have to make sense for what's going on, who you are in that world. But it's not then just about, okay, just give me what's here on the page. It does become much more about, well, who are you? Show me what's not on the page. How are you going to bring yourself to this in a way that's going to inspire someone to want to write for you? It's almost, you know, just giving yourself the freedom to say, what can I show? It's a drama, but is there a place to show a little bit of humor? Is there a place to show some vulnerability? Whatever it is that you're asking those questions as you're working on it, because, you know, there is only one you. So everyone, you know, is going to have a unique take on it. There's something in just allowing yourself the freedom to know that you can bring yourself to it.
Yeah. To put some of your own point of view into the character.
Exactly.
Yeah, color it with that.
Exactly. And I think that that goes for anything. And again, it goes back to, okay, but whatever choices you're making, does it make sense for this character, this world? Just making sure that doesn't end up going to a place of, okay, I see you making choices because you've been told you got to make choices.
It's a the casting director never wants to see us working, I guess.
No.
Is that, that's a good way to put
really.
It?
Not really. Yeah, no, it should feel very effortless. We should be able to, you know, as an audience, you want to just sit back and forget about all that. We don't want to see, okay, I can see all the choices that you're making. It's not naturally flowing.
Yeah. And I think that that's so difficult because I get that sense, that conversational, that's a big buzzword when I go into auditions, you know, make it conversational, like you're talking to a friend. And I think that for whatever reason, us actors, we can kind of fight against that. We want to be funny. We want to be dramatic. We want to be vulnerable. All these things that you've said, we want to show that.
Yes.
And instead of letting the script kind of dictate where that's going to go, find those beats within the script rather than inserting them, is what it sounds like you're saying.
It shouldn't be much. It shouldn't feel much different than you and I just chatting right now. I'm also especially sort of leaning on camera, you know, in this conversation. If once the camera goes on, you feel your whole energy shift. You know, if when you're acting, it's a whole different energy.
Yeah.
To me, might be a clue that you're probably working a little too hard.
It's like you get that stance where your feet are in that position, your chest kind of puffs up a little bit, you're on.
Yeah.
If you get that sense of, okay, now I'm on.
Yeah. And that's why sometimes look, everybody works differently. You know, I might like what someone did in a first take. I'll often say, great rehearsal. Let's do it again. Let's just do it again. Any notes? No notes. I just want to give it another run. Because I find that, you know, of course, ideally, that first one that you come in with is going to be totally relaxed and easy and whatever. But sometimes you find that, you know, that second one, it's like you got one out of your system and then it calms.
Right. You can kind of settle into it.
Settle in just a little bit. So I like that second take. I like to allow for that. It's just, it's going to be natural for there to be a little bit of, you know, nerves kick in. And, especially for something that really should just be conversational, it's going to want to feel really effortless.
Yeah. Getting to the technical side of the audition, the should we be memorized or unmemorized? You know, like, what are your thoughts on holding the sides, holding the script?
I say always have those sides in your hand. We expect that. You know, ideally, yes, you've had the chance to really memorize it and really work that material and be super prepared and know exactly what you want to do. Even when that's the case, I want you to have those pages in your hand. It's there for you. So when suddenly the lights are on, the camera's rolling and nerves do kick in, it's there for you. Ultimately, the flow and your choices are much more important than did you memorize or not memorize. the best auditioners find a way to incorporate, they've learned a way to either memorize in a way where they really know kind of moment by moment where that falls on page one or two or three. When they do suddenly realize that they've maybe lost their place or they're not exactly sure what the next line is, they just take a look and then they look back up and they're back with their partner. And, you know, there's an ease to it. The flow is the most important thing. You look down a few times, ultimately, nobody cares about that. Obviously, you're reading off the page or you didn't really prepare enough. So now nerves kick in. And so you're just constantly searching for the line. You know, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, I want those sides in your hand. The other thing that can happen is somebody really memorized those sides. They took the time, they memorized them, they know them so well at home, they did it 100 times, they come in, nerves kick in, and they stubbornly will not look at the page and can't get through it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not someone that wants to go back and edit a bunch of takes. I want one take. I need you to be comfortable with those pages. I need you to, in those moments, just take a look. It's not a big deal. Kind of say to yourself, if I were being paid to come in and it's going to be the first take, someone just says, I just want to see what your first take is.
Mm.
Go. What would you do? And did you bring your best of that day?
Yeah, because it is a day-to-day thing. You know, we have our great days and bad days, and
please.
We still have to audition no matter which day it is.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, that you're able to, you know, at least feel like I did the work and I'm going to show them what I would do. When I'm having auditions, I'm often the reader. I like that. It's also part of what I like to do is actually really be in the scene with that person, you know, because I get a good feel for it by doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to watch back and see.
And see what it looked like on screen.
See what it did. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But you know, in the room. So that's more my style. But I also, you know, yeah, you never know who you're going to get. You know, someone's reading that day and it's a comedy and their timing is terrible. It happens.
Right.
And you do have to just do your best and go with it. And, but again, all those things are only going to be more difficult if you haven't really prepared.
Yeah. If you don't know it.
And
yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing that I think in auditioning in terms of, you know, pet peeves or whatever, is someone really not being prepared.
Hmm.
They kind of thought they were just going to wing it. And when all of those things are happening, it's too much. It's not going to work.
What are your favorite types of work that you do? Whether it's a particular show or just a type of medium that you enjoy most?
As you said, I sort of dabble in all of it.
Right.
Because I love all of it. That said, I, you know, in a way sort of fell into television a decade ago. And I don't know if it's just because I know it the best, but, you know, I feel very comfortable in that medium. And, you know, I think every show can be very different. And it's exciting to work on a lot of different kinds of things.
They're all your children and you love them the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, when it comes to auditions, what is one thing that each of us need? A rehearsal space. Well, did you know that June is New York Music Month? And during that month, Spaceworks is offering free rehearsal space. That's right, free rehearsal space. All brought to you by the Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment. Now, Spaceworks builds and operates creative workspaces both in Brooklyn and Queens. So starting May 1st, if you're a singer or musician, you can book free space in June at Spaceworks 20 Studios in Park Slope, Williamsburg, and Long Island City. Now, to book space, you'll need to request a free Spaceworks card, which is a simple application process. And again, it's free. I did it myself online and I got my Spaceworks card, so now I can go into their facilities and book spaces. It took just a couple of weeks to receive mine by mail. So sign up today at spaceworksnyc.org to get your free SpaceWorks card and join their community of workspaces. Look in the show notes for that link so you can go to it directly. Now, a big thank you to SpaceWorks for this amazing offer of their rehearsal spaces for the listeners of Why I'll Never Make It and artists around the city. So I have a question for one of our listeners. This is from Megan, and she said, what well-intentioned things do actors tend to do that ends up shooting them in the foot instead of moving their career forward, i.e. Going out for projects they aren't actually available for, you know, just to be seen, or maybe sending, you know, too much to an office, communicating, contacting them too much?
Well, I think that the first one that Megan brings up is a good one. You know, I think you should avoid going in for something that you have no intention of actually accepting. You know, I think, you know, for our perspective, if someone is auditioning for a role, you're putting us in a position where if you come in, you do a great job, we're sending you to producers and the director, and we don't want them to get excited about somebody who would then pass.
True, yeah.
You know, so I don't think it's a smart approach just because you're saying, well, I don't know that casting director, I want them to see me. If for whatever reason you wouldn't want to actually accept the role you're auditioning for, I would turn down the audition for whatever reason, rather than go in and then later not want to do that.
Yeah.
On a smaller scale, I don't think that this is the end of the world in any way or not going to advance somebody, but I think don't walk into an audition apologizing.
Yeah.
You know, don't walk in apologizing that you just got sent the material, or you didn't, you know, you didn't have time to prepare, and it's not going
to come in with the excuses.
Yeah. It doesn't. I think you're undercutting yourself, and you're basically saying, this is going to be bad. And I'm real sorry about that.
And you as a casting, you're like, well, I'm so glad you're here then.
Exactly. It just doesn't, you know, it's not really helpful to anybody. At the end of the day, we need to see again, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
With this material, it doesn't really help to say, well, they just got the material, they really would have been, you know, much better.
Yeah.
We know. Or maybe we don't know, but find us before you're entering that room.
Yeah.
So don't run in apologizing.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if the director, producer, or whatever is in the room.
Yeah. Exactly. And when I was an assistant or even an associate and somebody runs in apologizing, they just got the material. Even if the casting director knows the situation, you feel sort of put on the spot. Well, who sent that material? I did. You know, I would just avoid that.
Yeah, no unintentional throwing someone under the bus.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And maybe, you know, yeah, it's just something that, yeah, I think it doesn't help anyone.
The next question I have is from Ian, and he is wondering, what is the best way to contact a casting director? Is it through email? Is it just Actors Access, physical mail?
Yeah, I think it's very, it's really a personal question to each casting office. Definitely everyone should have their Actors Access account. You know, that's a great way. You know, and then when you have met someone, I think then you want to ask that casting director, you know, how what's the best way to keep in touch.
Yeah, because I know for myself, I used to do the postcard route, and I just found, for myself, no benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And I even would talk to a couple of casting directors a while later and mention something that I told them in the postcard that they never, they're like, oh, I didn't know that. So obviously they didn't see that postcard because it gets lost in their other mail. So, I mean, for me, I didn't find any personal benefit from that. But maybe there are those who go through every postcard, love that, and they love the physical mail.
Yeah, I think some too. Yeah. You know, so it depends. But, you know, again, in the digital age, things are changing and most things are being received online. You're not really going through, you know, mailed pictures as much.
right, exactly. Which actually brings me to my last question about self-tapes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because especially on Actors Access, there's a lot of eco-casts, as they're called. So with these self-tapes, are you looking for something different or a better way to prepare than you would were we actually in the room for you? Like, what is the best way an actor can prepare for one or the other?
I think the important thing about a self-tape, you want to do all the same work that you would do if you were coming in the room. For me, it's just sort of a technical thing in terms of making sure that you have good lighting. You know, make sure both sides of your face are lit. Make sure that you're close enough in your framing that we can really see what you're doing. You know, if it's a full body shot self-tape, you know, if you're thinking it, we're seeing it. So we want to be close enough that we can see what's, you know, your face. Make sure we can hear you. Make sure you've watched it once or have somebody watch it. You know, the amount of times where a tape is unusable simply for a technical reason. You know, one time I received a self-tape. It was a one line, and the person was completely fuzzy for the whole line.
Yeah.
And at the very, very end, the image became clear just before the tape went off. I can't send that to the creative team.
It does make you wonder. It's like, how did you send this and think that this was going
to
work?
And maybe someone doesn't like to see themselves. I don't know.
So they just did it, sent it without thinking.
Somebody didn't watch, I have to assume. But, you know, we can't use that.
Right.
And we often don't have time to
ask again.
Mm-hmm. For us, you know, I like to utilize the self-taping. The intention was to have them in, but they're out of town, or they just are on a different coast and we're casting out of New York, but we're seeing all over the country or elsewhere. And again, because of the digital age, self-taping is a big thing. Some offices, I think, at times maybe use it to they can be able to see more people and pre-screen more people that way. You know, whatever it is, I don't think that there's a difference in the way that you want to prepare. It's more just those technical things.
Yeah.
You know, even try to find a blank wall. It doesn't need to be a blue wall, you know? Maybe don't do it in front of your bookcase.
Something
you
know, that's not distracting.
Yeah, try to stay away from anything that's too distracting.
Yeah.
You know, ultimately, we want to see your acting and your choices for that scene. And again, what would you do?
And with that self-tape, should we do it twice? You know, okay, try it this way. Should we give two takes or what are your thoughts?
I don't think it's necessary to do that always. But if for some reason you feel strongly and say, there's two different ways that this can go. There's two different ways to interpret this. I think both of those are possibilities. You know, I want to show both. And it's clear that it's really different. You know, I don't think we don't need two takes just for the sake of two takes.
Okay.
But am I open to, there's two takes here. If again, it's two really different ways to go. Yeah. You know, I personally would be open to that. I'd prefer they be two separate links so that I can choose one.
Right. So instead of the same take.
Right.
Instead of the same scene, same role.
Yeah.
And so would you say that that's the same for scenes like say you're given three sides, then it needs to be three separate links, three separate takes, or put them all into one video?
That can be one video. If you're, it's one role.
Right.
And it's three different scenes. Yeah, you don't have to separate that. And then again, I think if you're going to have for scene two, here's an alternate scene two, you know, I might separate that out.
Yeah. So in wrapping up, there's an organization that you had mentioned that you are a part of.
Yes. Yeah, it's called the Artist Patron Fund. It's a charity that provides fiscal sponsorship to mid-career artists.
Oh.
Specifically, project-specific grants. Yeah, all funds go to the artists and their projects, but not just performing arts, also visual arts. You know, this was founded in 2016. Elizabeth Huber, who is a very close friend, going all the way back to Fordham. It was her idea. Always had a love for the arts, and having been in the city now for so long, you know, we know so many artists who all this time later, still working at it, still putting up art and in New York and everywhere, though. It's so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so expensive to do this.
To live in the city and then to also have the art on the side.
And just putting up the arts in general, you know, because it doesn't have to be New York City specific. But I think seeing how incredibly expensive it is to allow people to make art and do what they love doing. So she had this idea to try to help raise this, you know, fund so that every year people can apply depending on what projects they have and can apply for different grants. The application period is actually open as we speak. You know, it's been different things. In our initial year, Tony Gregory is a photographer and needed a grant to help fund a project. He was going to Oregon to film the solar eclipse.
Oh, wow.
Needed funding to help that project along. We've given grants for stage productions to the playwrights, to a reading, to an actress who was developing her own site-specific work, a developmental grant. So it just all, you know,
is it mostly different new things. Works that are promoted through this fund?
Yeah. I don't think that if somebody was putting up a classic or something, I don't think that would be excluded. It would depend on what the grant was for specifically,
right.
And how that worked in to, you know, who we were able to help that year.
And so you said that there's an application process. What is that application process like?
Well, there's a website, which is artistspatronfund.org. And you'll learn all about us, all about the application process. We also have a fundraiser April 29th. So tonight, come on down to Elmo. We're going to have a fundraiser for the Artist Patron Fund. And yeah, I mean, the application process, we're looking for you to tell us what you're working on, how much you ideally would like to help fund the project, and for what specifically. Maybe you're a visual artist and you are working on a piece that's going to be part of a larger, you know, maybe you're hoping to show at a gallery or something, and you just need a grant money for supplies.
For material. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It can be that simple, all the way to, you know, you're putting up a full production.
And so these are the production costs.
Right. These are the production costs. Yeah. And every year, yeah, doing what we can to raise as much as we can.
Yeah.
And then based on what we have, how many applications we've received and what those are for, trying to figure out where the need is and then giving as much as we can and hoping that even if it's a small grant, sometimes that's just enough to really help someone get that project started or completed or whatever it may be.
Yeah, wherever they are in the process.
Exactly.
Yeah. What is the deadline for this application?
The application period right now, it's open till July 1st.
Okay.
We usually then announce grants sometime in the fall.
Yeah. It sounds like it's a great way then and a great organization that you're a part of to really give back and foster those that are just trying to make it in this business. Because you've been with it from the beginning since 2016.
Yeah. So this is just our third annual fundraiser. In that sense, we're still very new.
Yeah.
Again, artistpatronfund.org. You'll learn about the different artists. I think they're all, you know, pretty exciting. And so it's been a really fun, worthwhile organization to be a part of.
It sounds like a great organization to be a part of. Well, thank you, John. Thank you for giving insights into the sometimes crazy business of auditioning and acting.
Absolutely, absolutely.
To learn more about John Ort, go to the website, winmepodcast.com. There you'll see all the links and details about what we talked about today, as well as the Artist Patron Fund. Also on the website, you will find a link to help support this podcast in producing these weekly episodes through your generous donations. More importantly, if you enjoy listening to these stories and interviews as much as I love being a part of them, then please share this podcast with those who you think would enjoy and benefit from these conversations. As always, thank you for joining me and John today. Don't miss a single episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
I'm Patrick Oliver Jones, and I'll see you next time on Why I'll Never Make It. Done.
Lovely.
Cool.